staying alive, sustaining alive. Sustaining alive.
Sustaining alive on 95 BFM.
Hey Rita, I just want to mention as well, we've got a brand new sponsor for this fine segment.
That's super exciting.
Our friends at Craft Homes, who are specialists in new homes and renovations with sustainability in mind, are taking this fine feature on board, which is awesome. So if you haven't,
if
you're listening out there and you haven't already checked them out, I would head along to crafthomes.co.nz and check them out. There's heaps of information about them and what they do up on their website.
Fantastic. And maybe we can have a look in the next couple of weeks at into building and what they can suggest in building a home or renovating.
Yeah,
I know,
sure.
I made some major mistakes with mine, so wish there was a company out there like that could have helped out.
Well, now you know.
Now I know. Cool.
Now, so what are we talking about? The government is out hustling for feedback on their biodiversity strategy, which is an important document. It's crazy that we've got to the point where we're going, oh, wait a minute, all these species of everything from insects to birds have all decreased significantly in the last few years. What the hell are we going to do about it now?
It's kind of quite surprising that we've got to this point, like you say, and we haven't talked about it before, because it's not a new phenomenon. We have been losing species since humans arrived, basically, which is, you know, about 800 years, and even faster since colonialisation and colonisation, sorry, and then even faster as our population is growing. So,
is it fair for us to point the finger at the dairy industry? Is that just too easy a target to go? They've just soaked up lots of bush and.
It's probably, it's more complicated than that, really. And actually, dairy is kind of the latest in a series of farming practices. If we're going to point the finger at something, we could probably go much further back than that. We had widespread deforestation when the Europeans arrived to build and export a lot of hardwood overseas. A lot of people don't know this, but San Francisco is actually, a lot of the old buildings are built with Cody. And that was a big export market for us for a long time. And then right through to in the 70s, there were actually subsidies to clear land for sheep farming, I believe. And we cleared a lot of land that was really inappropriate. It's a really steep hill country. It's complicated. There's so many, and even housing. For us, and so there's lots and lots of different reasons for it. Invasive species are particularly bad. Humans have bought all sorts of species, both accidentally and on purpose, that have had huge impacts.
Ferrets.
Ferrets. But even more recently, people will have bought over beautiful looking plants that have taken off, and jasmine's a really good example. Lots of people love jasmine. It smells beautiful, but it's actually really invasive.
What about the bees?
Bees
love jasmine, don't they?
They do. But our bees that we rely on from a commercial perspective, they're imported too. But they keep somewhat to themselves. They're not really considered invasive. They're exotic rather than invasive.
Yeah. Now, Rita, what's the government proposing? How are we going to claw back some of this biodiversity? What can we do?
I thought I'd also just talk about what biodiversity is, because we probably throw that term around without really understanding it. And in New Zealand, we're actually in a really unique position with biodiversity. So I thought we'd explain what it is. So in a nutshell, it's species richness of an area, so the number of species that fit in an area. And in New Zealand, we like around the world, there's biodiversity hotspots, which are sort of areas that have a really high species count, so lots of different species in a really small area. And to be a hotspot, they have to have a certain amount of these species, and they have to be threatened areas. So, you know, they're being logged or they're being cleared or whatever, and that's killing off these species. And there's only, it depends on what source you're looking at, there's only 24 to 36 of these hotspots around the world. And some of them are quite small areas, so there'll be a valley or something, you know. Some of them are large, like Madagascar. And if you think about somewhere like the Amazon, I mean, you could step 2 feet and count thousands of different species. What is unusual about New Zealand, and I'll just also throw out there that these hotspots in the world are actually only 1.4% of the land and capture 60% of the world's species. So, that's why they're hotspots, because they are like such a dense area of lots of different species. And we're talking plants, birds, mammals, reptiles and amphibians, so that sort of thing. The thing that's unique about New Zealand is we actually don't have a high number of endemic species. So we'll also just throw out that word, it's a bit scary, endemic, which is, so when we talk native species, they're species that belong here, but they also live overseas. We can find them somewhere else as well. And an example of that is some of the dolphins and whales that come through New Zealand waters. We have 60% of the world's dolphins and whales come through New Zealand, but because they also go elsewhere, they're considered native. Whereas endemic means the only place they exist is New Zealand. And an example of that would be the Maui dolphin, which only lives in certain little pockets of New Zealand. So when we're talking about species, a diverse biodiversity in New Zealand, it is a hotspot, but not because of the number of species that are here, but because we have a really high endemic count, which means, sure, we don't have a lot of different species, but we've got, 80% of the species that are here are only found here. So, and that's quite unique. Whereas, somewhere in Madagascar, they may have species that are found there, but they're also found on the mainland.
Elsewhere, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what kind of makes it quite unique. And I think, it's fair to say that our species also don't really survive very well in many other places because they have no defences, because they evolved without any natural predators. They don't really do very well anywhere, where there is anything that can kill them. So that's what biodiversity is, especially for New Zealand. It's a very unique kind of exception to the biodiversity rule, I guess, globally. And it's why it's seen, as many scientists, as a very unique place, because there's not many places in the world that have this high endemic count. If any, I think there's a few spots where it's like, really, really high altitudes and stuff like that have high endemic species, but for the most part, for a whole country to be really high and have this high endemic count is what makes us so unique.
So we've got quite a special, I guess, place with these special creatures living here. What is the government going far enough with their goals to improve biodiversity?
Yeah, so that's just it. They did a report that came out about 2 months ago, and we touched on it. We didn't cover it too much because it was pretty depressing, and we had covered it kind of very, very much so in the past. But we do have some pretty shocking numbers. So the stat that came out of it was that there was 4,000 endemic plants and animals that were at risk of extinction. And I don't really like numbers like that because I feel like it doesn't help. Like 4,000 out of what, So just to give you some kind of background, we're talking about almost half of all of our endemic plants are at risk of extinction. 80% of our land vertebrates, so anything with a spine, 80% of them are at risk of extinction. And then you've got 35% of invertebrates, so things without a spine, so your insects, basically. So those are pretty shocking numbers. And 2/3 of our native ecosystems, and that's the key here, is that 2/3 of the ecosystems are threatened and at risk. And when you have an ecosystem that's threatened, it means it's not performing as it should, and that's where things fall down. And it doesn't take a lot to fix, to kind of throw an ecosystem out of balance.
Just moving on to something like climate change, which is, going to be responsible for an incredible amount of change in the environment, but which is probably largely out of New Zealanders' hands. Obviously, we can do stuff towards climate change, but when you look at the pollution coming out of, countries which are far bigger than ours, is there anything that we can really do to deal with something like that? We're kind of mercy of other nations.
Yeah, we absolutely are. I mean, even though we do pollute from a climate change perspective, our greenhouse gases well overshoot our population. So we actually use much more than we should. It still is, like you say, a really small percentage of the world's emissions. And until we can get these big countries on board, we are kind of screwed. But I think if we are going to do something, it's leading the way, because we can show the world that we can do it, and if we can do it, then anyone can. Because per person, we have some of the highest emissions in the world in New Zealand. So if we can show it, these Americans and China and these countries where they're going, how are we gonna change? They we lead by example, right? And then that's when we can say, look at what you guys are doing to our country, and we can say that with clean hands rather than saying that while we still pollute more so than the average citizen.
With pest eradication, moving on to pest eradication, do you think, it's one thing to say, hey, we're going to get rid of all these predators and pests, but is there going to be any actual, real policy or real process put in place to deal with this sort of stuff?
Yeah, and that's kind of what this document, they set out these, sets out these kind of goals, but there's still a massive lack of how are we going to get there? Like you say, the goal of being free of stoats, possums and rats by 2050, and there's a few other kind of lofty sort of goals in there. So increase the population for all currently threatened native species, and ensure that there's no bycatch of seabirds, marine mammals or corals by 2050. Those goals are great, but if they were so easy, then we would have already done them by now. Or we'd be on track to doing them. So to me, it's sort of, and massive hats off to Eugenie Sage, who's really driven this discussion document, because it is still a step in the right direction. But it is still like, I probably should have thought of an analogy before now, but it really does feel like, the car is falling apart and there's someone in the back of the vehicle going, maybe we should have a think about what we should do about this, as opposed to like stopping the vehicle and putting it back together or whatever. It seems to me like it's a very slow process for something that's kind of actually pretty urgent. One of the things that's quite nice about it is it does plan to set out roles and responsibilities for everyone that's involved, and in particular how central government, local and regional governments will work together, because at the moment that is very disjointed, and I think until that's fixed, we sort of have, like the RMA, for example, the Resource Management Act, is set up at central government, but then once you get down to local government, who are supposed to implement it, they don't have the money to do so. So quite often it's just been going completely unenforced, and I think that this document hopefully should fix some of those things, but it still feels like a tiny, very, very slow, and two, just a tiny bit of it, because we also probably need to talk about how does the economy fit into this, and how do brands and corporations, like, what's their responsibility? Because there's a lot of pressure from them on to central, regional and local governments,
It's interesting to see that they are seeking consultation on it. updating a strategy from 2002, and you go, oh, 2002 is actually, you know, creeping up on 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is setting targets 2025, 2030, and 2050. Which isn't too far away in the future, and they're quite ambitious. By 2050, I can just run you through some of the points that they're hoping to have achieved. The net extent of indigenous ecosystems is increasing. The extent of undegraded rare and naturally uncommon terrestrial indigenous habitat, okay, active sand dunes, braided riverbeds, estuaries, cloud forests, etc., is increasing. The number and extent of freshwater and coastal wetlands is increasing. 10 key freshwater pest species and 10 key land-based weed species have been eradicated. Good luck getting rid of Didymo. New Zealand is free from stoats, possums and rats. I reckon that's a good one. All established pests are reduced to a level where ecological integrity is not diminished, and populations are increasing of all our threatened species. Bycatch of seabirds, corals and marine mammals is reduced to zero.
Uh-huh.
That's incredibly ambitious.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And every business is helping to restore nature, which is kind of cool. That's a good one.
I mean, you know, they're all such honourable goals, but it's like we should have set them in 2002, and actually have a plan for that. Like you say, you know, some of these dates aren't that far away. One of them is to halt all wetland destruction by 2025. Now, we've only got about 7% wetland left, so by God, we better have stopped it by then, yes. Or there's not there, you know what I mean? It feels like the horse is bolted.
Yeah.
So there is some other, the other thing is some of the goals that are 2050, that's a long time away, and there's going to be 10 government changes in that time. So, you know, that makes me wonder, like, you know, There's no real hard and fast kind of metrics around this, and there's nothing that's really. Even once it's done, it's going to be a strategy document. There's nothing forcing us to kind of hold to this. And if you sort of look at the last 10 years of the previous government, they basically put all environmental measurements. The state of the nation in terms of environmental reporting stopped. Money that was the DOC funding was slashed. So it's sort of like all it takes is 10 years of one government deciding that that's not a priority over the economy, and this whole thing has just been a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
So to me, it sort of needs to be embedded in something that's a little bit more. A little bit more legislatively
formal.
Strong.
Yeah, yeah.
No? But,
it's pretty intense. Now, Rita, if people, hopefully this biodiversity strategy will hold a bit more weight than just being like a bit of, loose paper that gets thrown in the garbage. But if people want to have a look at it and have a say on it, they can head along to the Department of Conservation website.
Yes, they can. It's called Our Shared Vision for Living with Nature. You can actually just if Doc's website's quite hard to, you just Google that, Our Shared Vision for Living with Nature, and look for the files that they sit on the Doc website. They are calling for feedback on this document by the 22nd of September, and it's not because it's not a legislative document. It's actually not that difficult to read, so it is kind of in relatively layman's terms for people, which makes it, I think it's a lot easier to then submit on it. And you know, if you are thinking about submitting and you sort of do agree what Johnny and I have kind of just talked about, I definitely say something about the fact that this needs to be bound by legislation, or you know, this needs to be embedded to ensure that future governments, you know, are held to account for it. That there's hard and fast measurements, because even at a bare minimum, nobody likes wasting taxpayer dollars on talking. Do you know what I mean? And all this time and effort that we put in to the strategy document, we don't want just being, you know, like you say, a piece of paper that can be thrown out. Mm. If we're going to agree to it, then let's agree to it and do it properly.
All right, Rita. Hey, thank you very much. If you're listening out there, as Rita said, you can check it out. It's pretty easy to find. You can pretty much just Google Biodiversity Strategy Government NZ. There's also a great piece on RNZ from the 5th of August, which kind of sums up a lot of the points that you can check out. Get involved.
And also, I think Eugenie Sage did also do a piece on BFM, so that sits on the podcast as well.
Okay.
So you can hear her take on it. And have a read and submit.
Okay, cool. Hey, well, thank you very much, Rita. And, of course, thanks to our new sponsors, Craft Homes.
Nice work.
Building
thanks, Craft Homes.
A sustainable future. All right, Rita, we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95 BFM.